Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Everybody, and welcome back to Junk Food Cinema. You just heard the rousing strains of the Thai national anthem. We will get into why Thai in just a second. But first, welcome again to Junk Food Cinema. This is the weekly cult and exploitation filmcast right here on filmschoolrejects.com that is so good, it just has to be fattening. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and I am joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host. I'm going to start by telling you he's a lieutenant in Megaforce, and I'm going to work my way down the list of accomplishments in descending order of grandeur. So we've got lieutenant in Megaforce, we've got novelist, screenwriter, doing something with Doctor Strange, whatever, see Robert Cargill.
Hi.
Is that better?
Well, I guess, yeah.
Okay. As long as you're
a lieutenant in Megaforce.
No, I started with that. I fucking started with that. You can't be a lieutenant in Megaforce, all those other things, and then also a lieutenant in Megaforce.
That's Megaforce.
That's overdoing it, I feel, which, much like the movie Megaforce, slightly overdoes it at times.
At times?
At times. Always in the 80s. If you would like to hear more of us overdoing it, you can find our back cataloged episodes on Stitcher as well as on iTunes. I almost said YouTube. That's not right at all.
You can't find us on YouTube.
We are not on YouTube.
If there's anything you can find of us on YouTube, you probably don't want to see it.
Yeah, don't watch that. I was very young. I needed the money. I was working my way through college. Don't worry about it. Just don't search for it. But you can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. You know, I feel like as humans, we were born to do a lot of things, Cargill. I feel like we were born to reproduce. We were born to consume. But mostly, we were born to fight.
Oh, born to fight. Born to fight. Born to fight.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so excited about this.
This should have been probably one of the first episodes we've ever done.
Probably.
But it has taken us a while, but it's so worth the wait. I hurt just watching this movie. I feel physical pain, and not in the sense that this movie is bad, but just watching the stunts in this film, I feel like I have been kicked in the chest.
It's pretty rough at times. There's easily half a dozen moments in this movie that you cringe at, that it is almost impossible not to cringe at unless you're made of wood.
Yes.
It is. These hits are so hard, and it seems like life is so cheap in this country that they just, it's like, are we going to kill a stuntman? We hope not. It's a brutal, brutal movie.
Yes, so pack your passports and plenty of bandages because we're hopping a plane to Thailand for the 2004 film Born to Fight, which...
Born to Fight. Born to Fight.
Born to Fight. Born to Fight. Which, do not get it twisted, don't get it confused with a 2011 film called Born to Fight starring Stone Cold Steve Austin. No. Born to Bite. This is a film that basically pits... This is okay. So I think as we were watching this movie tonight, we kind of came up with the idea that this is the movie that Jim Cotta thinks it is. This is the movie that when Jim Cotta grows up,
it's going to be Born to Fight.
It's going to be Born to Fight. This is a movie about a group of athletes that have to defend a village from terrorists. A group of athletes, and then as it would happen, One special forces cop who happens to be there as well. So he's very, like, pretty much everyone is sort of thrust into that John McClane role of being in the wrong place / right place at exactly the wrong / right time and having to rise up and face the odds down. And in this case, the odds are as overwhelming as the insanity of watching gymnasts and rugby players and soccer players just take down fully armed militiamen or mercenaries. But that's what we have. That's the basic setup of this movie.
It is athletes and villagers versus terrorists.
Yes.
If that doesn't get you excited right now,
turn this off.
You've been listening to the wrong podcast.
You were not born to fight.
Let me.
You were born to flight.
Born to Fight may be the greatest 80s movie never made in the 80s.
This is true.
It is a film directed by someone who clearly wanted to make a Michael Bay film, and perhaps the most Michael Bay film of all time.
Yes.
In Thailand.
Yeah.
It is a movie in which the plot is wafer thin. The characters are wafer thin. The plot devices are wafer thin. All to set up a 31-minute action scene.
We timed it tonight. We timed it from the start of the final action sequence until what is essentially the denouement of the movie. 31 minutes of the runtime are committed to one enormous action sequence in the village when the gymnasts, when the athletes all rise up and decide, fuck this, we're taking down the terrorists. We don't care that we're outgunned. We're taking them down.
Yeah. No, it is a movie. It takes about 45 minutes to get into where it's going, doing all the setup. That doesn't mean there aren't action sequences or emotion or wafer-thin characters in between. But this movie exists entirely in service of 31 minutes of nearly uninterrupted action. There's
yes.
one moment at minute 21 where we break away to the prime minister going nuclear, and then we cut back to one of the characters realizing that he needs to put on a headband to
yes.
kick some ass, and then we're so back in it so quickly. And it just gives you a chance to catch your breath and go, okay, you think you've had your fill? Oh, no. Oh, no, we're not done yet. We still have a lot of people's asses to kick.
Yeah.
This is a movie that is entirely about this 31 minutes. And the thing is, it is an incredible, breathless, amazing 31 minutes of stunt work that is fucking unreal.
And I'm so glad that our hero takes that moment to put on the headband, and that transformation comes about so fully, and the transformation is so fully realized, because right after he puts on the headband, he kicks the shit out of people. But before putting on that headband, all he was doing was kicking the shit out of people.
Yes, but he really, really was dedicated to kicking the shit out of people in the third act of that action sequence.
The third act of that act?
That's the thing, is this... The movie is a movie in three acts,
yeah.
and yet its action scene is a 31-minute action scene in three acts.
Yes.
Like, it is just, this thing is unreal. So let's get into it,
yeah.
because it's this, where you're like, how the hell do you set this up and make it make sense? It makes sense.
Well, it kind of can't not make sense, because there's not much to it. I mean, you have a cop named Dia, who is sort of the not quite Tony Jaa of this movie.
Which, by the way, we should mention that the director of this produced Ong Bak.
So
isn't that correct?
I believe that is correct. So it's definitely someone who's coming from sort of the Ong Bak production
and I'm
situation.
Sure, and I'm certain that that means he brought over a number of the stuntmen from Ong Bak. If you are an Ong Bak fan, and if you aren't an Ong Bak fan, if you haven't seen Ong Bak, you need to see Ong Bak.
The director also wrote the story for Ong Bak.
Yeah. And so, this is from that era of Thai craziness that happened in the mid-2000s. And this is my favorite of these. But so we've got Dia.
Yes, and so he's working undercover at the beginning of this film to take down a corrupt general and his sort of his crime empire that he's set up. So he and his partner, the Sarge, are infiltrating this crime syndicate run by a corrupt general. Something goes wrong. Sarge ends up dead, but they do capture the general. That is act one of this movie. That's our sort of inciting action, is that this general gets arrested.
In an incredible action sequence,
yes,
all its own.
Absolutely.
This movie opens up with an action sequence that is great, but once you've watched it, you're going to forget that you saw it because of what happens next, because you're going to think, oh, yeah, no, the movie opens with them going off and then all the shit happens. You forget, and then you watch it the second time. You're like, oh, yeah, there's this whole weird cop story at the beginning. It opens with this Michael Mann shot.
Yeah.
And then we go into this whole kind of Michael Mann sequence of undercover cop stuff, and then it becomes a John Woo movie.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we are racing on top of tractor trailers and kicking the shit out of people, and we get the first stunt that tells you exactly what you're in for in this movie, in which two guys are fighting on top of a tractor trailer. There are two tractor trailers side by side. One guy gets kicked off of the tractor trailer.
Lands between the two speeding
smacks
trucks.
The other truck, falls in onto the ground, his head inches from the tire tread of an 18-wheeler.
In a way that when you watch it, you will realize very quickly what's never intended to be that close to the back tire. It is obvious that this is a situation where they kept this take because it was so good, but where they very nearly killed a stuntman because there's no way they had planned on his head getting that close to the back tire.
Oh, God, no. And if they did, they were nuts. Because you just watch it, you're like, oh, my God, he died. Oh, he's not dead.
And even revisiting this and knowing that he lives and knowing that it's, you know, the stunt work is so good, I was still like, oh, God. Okay, woof. Like, you still can. And it's that accidental tension that comes from a very irresponsibly exciting stunt sequence, and yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah. And so then we get to the end of that sequence, the general gets captured and Sarge dies, and we end up with Dia, who is just depressed. He has lost his mentor, his superior, and feels responsible, and rightly so.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing. Because they're in the back of this truck where the general was trying to escape. They've crashed his tractor trailer. They're in the semi-trailer, and there's a bomb in there, and the Sarge is pinned under some barrels, but the general's trying to get away, and the Sarge is like, stop him, and then, you know, come back for me, and we'll disarm this bomb. As far as we could tell watching this, that bomb's not attached to anything, and it's very small. Why didn't they just pick it up and take it outside of the truck and throw it somewhere? It seemed like unnecessary, but it's not unnecessary in the sense that Sarge has to die to give our hero more motivation to rise to the next challenge and not give up the next time. But it's just funny to watch thinking, why didn't you just move the bomb, dude? You could have gotten everything accomplished. Just move the bomb.
Yeah. So sitting on his couch depressed, his sister shows up and says, hey, the sports union is getting together and we're going to go out and we're going on a trip to a small poor village. We're taking all this stuff to them. It's charity work. I need you to sign my permission slip. And he's like, yeah, you can go, but I'm going with you. And so they go and hook up with all these various sports people from the sports association, hop on a bus and go to the poorest town known to man, a town so poor, we have to hear a soulful, almost 70s Western-esque ballad about how poor this town is.
This town is so poor, and they linger on it so much with the camera that I expected some voiceover to be like, for less than the price of a cup of coffee, you can sponsor this village. Like, I was ready. My wallet was out. I'm like, tell me, movie. Tell me where to send my money to this obviously poor village. They were wearing the T-shirts of Super Bowl losers of years past. That's how poor this village is.
Yeah, no, they half of them had T-shirts that said Jeb with an exclamation point on it.
Oh, so you have...
Which are available for half off from Jeb's website right
now. I'd be surprised if they're that much.
No, I'm actually not kidding.
Oh,
you can buy a Jeb 2016 T-shirt for half price right now.
I'm so glad you know that. That's amazing. But the great thing about the setup, the central conceit of this movie, is that a lot of these performers are actual athletes, are actual Thai Olympic athletes who are, and we have gymnasts, rugby players, soccer players, like boxers, martial arts champions. There's one of them is a former national taekwondo champion. Another is a Muay Thai fighter and gold medal winning boxer. There was one guy who is a striker for Thailand's national football team.
So as you can tell, there's probably not a lot of dialogue in this movie.
No, and in fact, I feel like the most dialogue that we get once we get to the village is them reciting the Thai national anthem.
which we'll get to. So this movie, the thing about this movie that is that you've got this poor village, they're giving out rice, they're giving out blankets, they're giving out toys, and then these small personal conflicts all start arising. And we start seeing, you know, just odd relationships forming. And then we get in the middle of what looks like a major subplot as the town bully who has a crush on this girl who seems not to, you know, care that he exists. The girl starts talking to one of our athletes, and he gets pissed, picks a fight. He and his buddies run off to talk about, you know, how to get back at this guy. And right in the middle of talking about that, they start getting ripped to shreds by machine gun fire.
Because this movie does not have time for your romantic bullshit.
No, no. This movie's like, hey, no, fuck subplots. We don't like subplots. This movie does not have fucking subplots.
Yeah. It's funny that the movie, before introducing us to the actual unlikable characters, kills off who we thought were going to be the unlikable characters in this village just immediately.
Except for one,
yes.
And so then terrorists show up and gun down half the town, corral everybody else, and we have this terrible, awful sequence of them just gunning people down.
Very, very reminiscent of the was it 2008, 2009 Rambo movie that Stallone did, where pretty much half the population of Myanmar gets just completely annihilated. It kind of feels like that.
Yeah, it's kind of brutal to watch. They corral everybody, except for our hero. Yeah. Our hero and the bully. Our hero and the bully are off. They're on their own. And while they're out there, we discover, as they do, that these terrorists have a nuclear missile that they plan to launch, and they're going to blow up Bangkok. One night, apparently.
One night in Bangkok, it will be destroyed.
So then they get captured. We flash forward through the night, you know, the prime minister and his people have been made aware that they need to release the general or else all of these people are going to be killed.
Yeah.
They send guys out to try to stop them. And the general's underling, one of the truly despicable guys, working with a group of truly despicable guys. There are four truly despicable characters that are not the general that you will just loathe over the course of this movie. And they start, rather than fighting the special forces coming in, they just start gunning down villagers right at the border of town. And so Prime Minister pulls people back and everyone is screwed. We have nowhere to go, nothing to do. We are done for. Our hero, Dia, then goes and tries to give a rousing speech to tell everybody, hey, look, if we don't do something, all of our friends, our family, our brothers, our sisters in Thailand, in Bangkok, are going to die. We have to do something. And everyone else is just like, fuck it. No, we're not doing anything. We're just not doing anything. And the radio they left on keys up at 8 in the morning, because that's when the radio apparently starts, and starts playing the Thai national anthem.
In a rousing moment that I think would make Lee Greenwood very happy, all of a sudden, all the athletes realize at once that they cannot allow themselves to quit. They must do whatever they can to try and stop this, and they all start singing along.
It's all found in the lyrics of the Thai national anthem.
Which is very... Like, at first I was like, is this really the Thai national anthem, or is this just the most convenient rework of a national anthem ever? Because it might as well have had lyrics like, just because we're athletes doesn't mean we can't fight these terrorists.
Well, not being from Thailand, I can't actually tell you, but I have a feeling that might be the inspiration where someone's like, because keep in mind,
this land is your land, this land is Thailand.
Those of you sitting out there listening to this right now that have not watched Born to Fight yet, how does this not sound like a fucking Michael Bay movie? It's a fucking Michael Bay movie.
It's as jingoistic as the most jingoistic Michael Bay movie. It just happens to be flag waving for literally at one point flag waving for Thailand instead of America.
They all stand up. They're singing loudly, practically shouting the national anthem at the top of their lungs. The national anthem finishes. And they fucking charge the terrorists.
Yeah.
And then for 31 minutes.
31 uninterrupted minutes.
Everyone fucking dies. Villagers, sportsmen, terrorists, big bad guys. Like, everybody is gunned down brutally. Nobody gets spared. There's like, I say nobody. There's a, like, they walked into a town that had several hundred villagers, and by the time the survivors drive out, there's like a small pack left. Like, this is the single most brutal gunning down of characters you are likely to see in a long fucking time.
For sure. And what's great about it is what is contained within that 31 minutes is a host of setups
that we are going to talk about for the rest of the podcast.
We may just do one by one, because these, what's so amazing about the composition of the action in this movie is that they find ways to set up each individual athlete so that their talent can be the thing that takes down their particular foe at any given time. Oh, you happen to be a gymnast. Well, thankfully, this village dries its clothing on parallel bars.
Yeah, you know, the thing about this movie that's so fucking cool, the thing that I love about this movie is the last 31 minutes literally is a series of events in which you go, wait,
The answer is yes. If you ever find yourself asking that question, the answer is yes.
And then the thing is when they do it, you're never like, oh, I can't believe they did it. You're like, fuck yeah, they just did that.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of moments. It's just, it's so unreal how they go about setting these up and then executing them, and often executing them in wonderful, delightful slow-mo, or giving you the... It was a shot so nice, we showed you twice, cut into how awesome it was. It's kind of fucking crazy and awesome. It delivers, we're telling you, this is a movie about fucking sportsmen fighting terrorists. What do you want to see?
It's there.
It's fucking in there. This movie delivers on every single second of, oh my God, until you've just had your fill, and then we give you just a smidge more where you're like, okay, just I'll have a little dessert. And then you're like, oh fuck, that was everything. That was fucking athletes kicking terrorist ass.
See, and I think what makes it work so well is this really odd juxtaposition of, you have, you know, athletes doing things like kicking melons at people, or, you know, flipping over and kind of knocking people. This could have so easily been, from that setup that we're describing, a G-rated movie. You have very, you know, being very nationalistic and we love our country and we're going to flip around and knock these bad guys out. But what happens in the course of that is a lot of actual consequences and a lot of actual stakes because of how violent the movie really is.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the stunt work that we mentioned in that opening sequence and how reckless it feels and how irresponsible it feels and how that creates such a spectacle continues throughout the course of this. People are bouncing off corners and corners of buildings and bars and in ways that it's like, how are you not paralyzed after this scene is over?
There's a moment to illustrate exactly what we're talking about and why this tension works and why, because normally, you know, 31 minutes might seem exhausting, but what they do, like, there's a moment in which somebody is running through a couple of buildings with a machine gun, and there's a terrorist, bam, there's a terrorist, bam, there's a terrorist.
The movie,
bam.
I made a joke that the movie went first person shooter.
Well,
in that
but
moment.
That's not the moment I'm talking about. Like, he's just going through it. He's like, killing a terrorist. And you're like, fuck yeah. And the terrorist comes around the corner, guns that guy down, just cuts him in half with machine gun fire. And that guy's gone. Like, this movie follows these characters and see them triumph. You see them kick ass. You're like, fuck yeah. And then the movie just snuffs them out and takes them away from you. Like, once that stuff starts happening, once you see people so successful and then, you know, fail miserably, you realize very few people are fucking getting out of this movie. And are the people I really care about going to die? So let's start talking about the people we care about.
It's like season four Game of Thrones all over again. Nobody's fucking safe.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's like, oh, hi. I was about to spoil something. Just like, you know what? Not going to do it. Someone's going to be listening to me.
That's okay.
I fucking haven't watched season five of Game of Thrones, you cocksucker.
That's all right. I would have bleeped it out. Don't worry about it. Just because we're so afraid of spoilers. But yeah, no, it's very, very... what I think is bizarre, though, is the choices that they make in terms of when to use slow-mo and when not to use it. Because I think there are some moments that would have actually worked a little bit better because they are so well executed in the moment, that I feel like if we could have seen the full impact of somebody literally like bouncing off a foot, flying back into, you know, a crossbeam, and then their face hitting the floor, where it's like, I kind of wish that was in the speed that it was clear they shot it at, because that would have actually had more impact. But at the same time, there are things that it doesn't matter what speed you show them at, and it doesn't matter how well trained your stuntmen are, that shit hurts. There's one particular moment where a guy lands on this big ceramic like cistern, and our hero jumps off of a platform and just comes down with both knees into the guy's chest to break the ceramic cistern. And I don't care how good a stuntman you are, you are falling into another human being who is lying on something rigid. Like, that is going to fucking hurt and probably break a rib or two.
Oh, yeah.
And that just happens. That's just a stunt in this movie. And that happens so often where you're literally sitting there cringing and praying for the life of that stuntman.
And in addition to the stunts, there's plenty of physical effect work.
Yeah.
The gunshots in this movie are often really brutal. There's this amazing moment where a guy gets shot in the elbow, separating his forearm from his upper arm. And then the guy grabs him, puts the gun against his head, and shoots him through the head and through the head of the guy behind him.
It's insane.
And it's just, and this is just one 15 second segment of 31 minutes. It's 31 fucking minutes of that.
It's, I think breathless is exactly the right word for this, because you're going to hope for a moment of repose, a respite from the onslaught of death and destruction that's happening, but you're not going to get it. It's the movie just bulldozes its way through, very much like the rugby player does. But it's funny too, we talked about how this is very much a Thai filmmaker making a Michael Bay movie. The thing we didn't mention about the action sequence at the beginning of the movie is how it ends, which is with a semi truck plowing through a shanty town a la Bad Boys 2. And by a la, I mean plagiarizing Bad Boys 2.
Well, not so
much.
Which
in and of itself plagiarized Jackie Chan.
It's kind of a very much smaller shanty than Bad Boys 2.
But what is different, what I think is interesting, is they try to up it by setting that truck on fire as it's going through the shanty town.
Well, you know, the thing is, that sequence right there is the sequence that's like, oh, hey, remember when you thought this was going to be a Michael Bay or a John Woo movie? No, it's a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah.
Because the fighting on trucks and the guy, in which, on top of a truck, someone commits one of the five pillars of Wu.
The five pillars of Wu.
In which he jumps backwards with both guns blazing, shooting at a guy in slow motion.
Yeah.
And landing on the truck again. It is, you know, and it's like, oh, this is a John Woo movie. And then it's like, oh, no, we're going full Michael Bay. This is going to be slow-mo. There's going to be a national anthem. There's going to be lots of sequences with flags. We are going to, you know.
Do you have a flag?
Oh, we have a flag.
We have a flag. And it
we
will
have
not
a flag
touch the ground.
Sequence.
It will not touch the ground, goddammit.
That will not touch the ground. And then it just, oh, dude, it just goes. So let's talk about some of these amazing athletes.
Oh my God.
And the crazy shit that they do in this fucking movie.
I think my favorite may be the soccer player.
The soccer player has one of my favorite moments in the movie.
It's funny too, because it's a gag that works so well. They do it about five times, where something will be flying through the air or something will be at foot height, and he will kick it deftly into the head of a foe either coming at him or somebody across the way who's about to shoot someone else. And what kills me is, even after doing this several times, bad guys can't stop throwing shit at him. I'm like, guys, you're setting him up. You know this, right?
So we start with just wicker balls.
Yes.
And then we move on to
By the way, wicker balls are a thing. That's something you learned from this movie.
Yep.
I didn't know.
And they have some super hard wicker balls there, because they play extreme wicker ball out in the middle of nowhere.
Extreme wicker ball.
Which is what you do when you're poor and you have, you know, an extreme wicker ball.
And so, you live in a country where wicker ball is a thing.
So this guy keeps, you know, this one-legged wicker ball player who's hopping around on a crutch.
The wicker man.
He's
the
not
wicker
the
man.
Bees.
Not the bees.
So, he's the wicker man. We just had to have a Nicholas one true God Cage moment. So he kicks This guy's throwing extreme wicker balls at the soccer player. Soccer player's kicking extreme wicker balls. Then they're out of extreme wicker balls. But they're still terrorists. So our soccer player runs up a ladder and jumps in the air and kicks a melon from the tree into the face of a terrorist.
Yeah.
Is he done? What else could he possibly kick? Oh, a little later, he's going to find a steaming pot of boiling water that he will kick into a terrorist who not only will get hit with a pot of water, which hurts, but then the water is on him and he's scalding and steaming, running around screaming. Is he done? No, because nope. Now the terrorists are going to start doing what, my friend?
Because they throw fucking grenades at him. Why would you throw anything at the guy who's proven he can kick shit at you? Why? Why would you do that?
So that he can kick the grenades back, killing dozens of people.
My favorite part of that scene is the look on the guy's face when the grenade comes flying back behind him, when it's just like, what? It's like he just can't believe that a human being could kick a thing back toward him, changing the trajectory of the thing he just threw.
In slow motion, watching the grenade go back as he's, oh, no.
Kaboom.
Bam.
Kaboom.
But that's that. Those aren't even my favorite moments.
That's not even my favorite grenade moment, Cargill.
No, because there's another grenade. No, I mean, this movie continually says, you think that was cool? Well, watch this
yes.
shit. Check this shit out.
Yes, it is a movie one-upping itself all the way through.
We've got a guy in a tower shooting at everybody from up top.
Got to take him out.
How are we going to get rid of guy in the tower? If only there were a soccer ball. Oh my God, there's a soccer ball.
This village, because of the demonstration they were about to put on the athletes, is fucking lousy with soccer balls just lying on the ground. Soccer balls are like the detritus of this town, just scattered everywhere.
So he kicks the soccer ball, and we have this nice slow-mo shot of the soccer ball trailing through the air, hitting the guy. It like I'm literally talking like 100 yards. Like,
yeah. Hooks it, too.
Hooking it.
Yeah.
Comes in, hits the terrorist in the side of the head, knocks the terrorist right off the side of the tower to fall to his death.
And he bends it like Bruce Willis. Hello.
Those are just the moments the soccer player gets.
Seriously, like, guys, we could sit here and do like a top 50 of our favorite moments in this movie because there are
so many.
My favorite, I'll narrow down my favorite grenade moment. Kicking it back at the guy was number two. My favorite grenade moment, however, is when our hero, when he's in Super Saiyan mode, super pissed off Rambo Saiyan mode, with the headband with the coin in it, which again, I guess is just a nod to the fact that it's a piece of Thai currency and this is the most jingoistic movie ever made. So he puts the coin in the headband and that gives him super national power. And so he's running toward this trailer, which has, it looks like an Airstream, by the way, which I live in Austin, so I was going to go up and order like a cupcake or like a street taco from, but apparently
they only serve
bullets.
No, you were going to walk up and order a giant donut covered in something.
Oh, yeah.
Gordo's.
But it turns out the only thing this trailer served was bullets.
And grenades.
And our hero was pissed at this point. So when they threw a grenade at him as he's in full stride,
he's
running toward this trailer, they throw a grenade at him, which he palms in the air and just fucking throws right back at them in a move that was so ballsy, I swear to God, I thought his pants wouldn't fit.
And the thing is that this movie is replete with slow-mo. This is one of those moments where they're like, no slow-mo here. You're going to watch him catch it at full fucking speed and chuck it back, and then we have a practical explosion and knocking guys out. Like, this is the stunt we're doing today.
And if this movie was in English, I'm pretty sure the hero would have just grabbed it and went, bitch, as he threw it right back in their faces, causing an explosion. It's just, oh my God. And that's just my favorite grenade-related moment of this movie.
So then we have a rugby player.
Oh, the rugby
literally
player.
Literally running around tackling people and clotheslining them.
Yes.
And thank God it's a poor shanty town, because that gives us an excuse for our rugby player to tackle people through walls,
yeah,
shattering boards, impaling people on things.
It's a really good thing that this visit to the village begins with them handing them a big envelope and saying, here's a donation from the entire athlete union to make improvements to the school. That money is now going to have to be used to put everything back together, because all the destruction we're talking about, all these like these shacks getting torn down, is nothing when at the end of the damn action sequence, the entire village goes up in flames like it was carpet bombed by Robert Duvall. Like, everything is on fire at the end of this movie.
I love the smell of Thai food in the morning.
Apparently, he loves to roast some Thai in the morning, because holy shit, that village gets annihilated. So
wow, you just skipped like 80 different action beats.
There's so much.
Jump to the explosions.
I feel like a little kid with ADHD in an arcade right now.
That's what this movie is. Like, this movie, you will never, ever get bored watching the action scene of this movie. So we have this sister that we talked about earlier. She happens to be a martial artist. She runs around kicking people in the face. Also a gymnast, I believe, correct? Mm-hmm. Is she the gymnast and the martial artist?
I believe she is, yes.
So you pretty much lose track of who's who in this movie and just kind of judge them by what their skill is. It's like, oh yeah, that's the tall guy. He's the soccer dude.
Yeah.
It's a short guy. He's the rugby guy. So she starts jumping on balance beams and kicking people in the face. There's another guy who is a gymnast who is using every pole in the place to pole vault and to
there's like a windmill kick at one point, like he's in a break-in film on the pommel horse.
It's all for those of you out there that have experienced the glory of Gymkhana, and it is glorious, but not in the same way this is. All the type of weird bar moves and parallel bar moves that you see in Gymkhana that are kind of cool are executed incredibly cool in this. And you're laughing at how ridiculous it is that it's like, why would you even have that in the town? Like, I don't understand. Oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
So he's running around doing that. And then you have the little Thai girl.
Oh, whose dad was murdered at the beginning by Spitter. Yeah, I don't know how else to describe him. And I think the movie understands that it's going to be hard to keep track of who's who for a number of reasons, not just ones that sound really racist. But at one point after her father gets killed, the guy that shot him, at first you think it's really unnecessary. They like have this close-up of his mouth as he spits. But then later on you see that the same guy, you may not recognize him immediately, but she's staring daggers at him, and then they zoom in and he spits again. You're like, oh, that's the guy that killed her dad. And she goes into little Tyke rage mode and beats the shit out of this guy.
She goes into beast mode, and then he like picks her up and like throws her around. And then our gymnast girl comes in and kicks his ass a little bit, and he's knocked to the ground. And then little Thai girl's like, oh no, you ain't getting up, motherfucker. And she finishes him off and does so brilliantly. It's just, you're watching, you're like, yeah, go little Thai girl.
This is a movie.
Oh my god,
so badass.
Thai girl is awesome.
This is a movie so badass that the children are badass in this film.
Oh yeah.
It has so much action to spare that it can actually dole some out to the kids' table. Why not?
Yeah, and it's all of this, just everything you want to see, it does for you. Every time you think you see a setup and you're like, oh, I know what's gonna happen. Oh yeah, that was awesome. Like, it never disappoints you. There's not a single thing where you roll your eyes at. You are just into this movie at that point, and you're just in it to win it, and it is fucking awesome.
The movie is the entire movie is the kind of thing that would get cut down and stuffed into a montage in any other movie. But instead of having to cut everything down to show just the best parts, 31 straight minutes is its own montage, necessitating no cutting whatsoever. And if I had any complaints about this movie whatsoever,
if
it would be that there are moments when the music in this movie is so goddamn good, like right at the beginning.
It chugs along.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about like the Tangerine Dream.
The very beginning.
Tangerine Dream
sound. It sounds like, just like Tangerine Dream. And it's got this like cool, like Southeast Asia kind of like twang to it. It's so awesome. And then toward the end of the film, you get kind of your requisite, you know, like Cargill was saying, you're kind of blaring guitar.
You're just chugging, kind of like
Con Air, actually. Like kind of like that steel, like that really electric-y guitar in that score. But which is fine too. But in the middle, for no reason I can really understand, it starts to play really desperately Score in a Box, like we're watching a Charles Band movie. It just, like, I'm like, what is this? Why is this here? And it's very distracting. But luckily, it's only used in the 2 or 3 minutes that's not someone getting their ass kicked in this movie. So, I think it's a small complaint, but everything else in the movie works so well to complement the action of what's going on screen. It was almost comical how bad the music was in those moments.
So we mentioned it, so we may as well, we hinted at it, so we may as well bring it up. There's a moment in which all of this gunfire blows up the base of the flag.
Yes.
And a guy sees the flag falling towards the ground, runs and catches the flag in time, takes a moment, screams bloody valor, waves the flag around, and then charges into battle with the fucking flag.
By the way, Scream Bloody Valor would have also been a great title for this movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
Scream Bloody Valor.
That's the type of movie this is. Yeah. This movie's like, yes, a guy is going to run into a fight with a fucking flag, because fuck it.
With as much rageful sorrow as he exhibited when villagers were being gunned down.
And then we have the most 80s moment
of
this movie.
Oh, yes, we do.
It is so delightfully
80s. A moment so 80s, I'm not sure it wasn't actually cut and pasted from a Death Wish sequel.
There's a moment in which our bully that we mentioned early on is chasing down the general's underling, and they're going after him. And the general's underling shoots him up pretty bad. He's shot down a guy with a law rocket launcher. The hero bully, and then he gets gunned down by the general's underling. He crawls over to the law rocket launcher, raises his up, and the general's underling turns around just in time to make a terrible face and fire off a few terrible shots as the bully fires off the law rocket at close range and blows him to fucking dust and parts.
Yes, just a pile of viscera and what used to be. And you know what's crazy
about
that?
In slow motion.
You know what's crazy about that? I thought about this. If you think about Die Hard as the sort of American antecedent to this movie, this would be like if Ellis killed Carl. If Ellis suddenly kills the number two of the terrorist gang, the guy that you don't really like at first, the guy who's kind of the dickhead, because this character, even though he's had several moments of redemption since being a dickhead,
still a piece of shit.
Was still a piece of shit. And it would be like if Ellis, instead of getting shot by Hans, lives and blows up Carl with a goddamn rocket launcher. And I was like, that is how much action is in this movie and how much they had to, like, basically to disseminate to everyone in the film that they literally could let the dickhead of the village kill the number two bad guy. That is amazing.
It is. And then we get to the moment in which we have to stop the missile launch.
Yes.
And
we have to stop the VX gas from getting into San Francisco, Bangkok.
Yeah. So now you have this moment in which it becomes exactly the type of movie that you thought you were going to see at the beginning. It's a very Ong Bak sequence in which one guy fights two guys and keeps kicking them around, and it gets brutal and they get tossed around. Speaking of which, something we have not mentioned, we'll get back to this in a second. This movie is full of these moments in which they have 1-2 punches of the action, in which somebody gets kicked so hard they're picked up off the ground, only to immediately fall to smack into something else that hurts even worse than the kick.
Yes.
And there's even one shot.
Wait. You know what? Let's do this. I would like to introduce the first ever Junk Food Cinema That Must Have Hurt Award. Cargill, who is your nominee for that? You know what? That's Gotta Hurt. That's what we're going to call it. The That's Gotta Hurt Award. Cargill, who's your nominee?
The one that hurts me the most is when our gymnast, martial artist, is fighting atop a balance beam against a terrorist. The terrorist comes at her. She does this wonderful, well-placed kick that picks him up off his feet and sends him backward off the balance beam, spinning, his torso spinning towards her, and then he drops onto the corner of the balance beam chest first, only to then be thrust off and smack back first into the ground.
Yes, that one is entirely painful. My nominee for That's Gotta Hurt Award has got to be at the beginning of this film when a guy is kicked off of one of the semis, and instead of landing on the ground, lands on a passing cargo truck, but lands on the corner of the top of it, shoulder blade first, before then hitting the ground. That, oh my God, how he was able to get up and walk away is beyond me. It's so awkward. That's the thing, is a lot of the impact moments in this movie aren't even comfortable impacts. They're not against flat surfaces. They're against corners, or they're, you know, you hit beams, but you hit them at an awkward angle. It's just very, very awkward and painful. But yes, so that's gotta hurt.
So we have this action sequence that's full of a couple of those, because for some reason they decided to build the missile firing room on a two-tiered in a two-tiered building, and so they're throwing each other back and forth. The bad guy fires the missile. They do not stop the missile launch.
Don't!
Brian?
That's me.
What would the Eliminators do in this moment?
Well, see, I feel like the Eliminators would just, if I remember the subtlety, if I remember the nuances of their plan, they would smash the keyboard until something worked.
Yes. So, how does Born to Fight one up the Eliminators?
Oh, they go a step further by smashing the keyboard until something works.
Well,
with a guy's head.
We take the bad guy's head and smash the keyboard
until the missile blows or goes off course and ends up in the ocean.
Yes. Now they have actually set that moment up, because the guy's like, if we do this right and nobody messes with this, we have a 90% chance of hitting our target.
Yeah.
So he's just smashing the guy's head into the keyboard until the missile goes off course. And goes off into the sea, blows up, and apparently there's a bunch of fishermen that probably really ate it, because, you know.
Or Godzilla was created. We don't know. We don't know what happened after that, but...
But the movie's not over yet, Brian.
The movie just cannot end.
People have been thrown around, people have been gunned down, most of the town is gone, and we've had a nuclear explosion. What more could this movie have? Oh yeah, we haven't blown up the town yet.
No, we haven't. We haven't annihilated this already decimated village, and like, we really need to just blow it to bits. And that's sure enough what happens when our hero has to go back and save Hero Bully and get him somehow manage to get him from the center of town all the way out to the outskirts of the village in about 4 seconds, according to the timer on the bomb. And then
my one flaw with this movie, the one thing that I was like, come on, guys, was that the timers keep jumping around.
Yeah, they really do.
It's like there's part of me that wonders if maybe the editor didn't use Arabic numbers. I don't think that's possible. I thought the Thai used Arabic numbers. Maybe they don't. I am not a Thai expert, clearly, but yeah, they literally, like, it's at 1:50, and it's like, we have 1:50, and then we have a little action, we cut back, and it's 2:20. It's like, which direction is this bomb going?
It doesn't, and again, it's the same size bomb as the one in the beginning, so I'm like...
Well, but there's several of them, they've been placed all around town.
Okay, that makes a little more sense, because when the one bomb goes off, it proceeds to level the entire village. So I'm glad to hear there's more than one bomb.
That's the timer connected to all the bombs, and our guy, that's giving this movie credit... Our guy's not a bomb expert.
No.
He doesn't know how to defuse a bomb. No, we're not going to defuse the bomb and save the town. No, the town is going to go. We just have to get out of the town.
Yes.
And so we have more action. We have a flaming motorcycle fight.
Oh, my God. So cool.
Guys on a motorcycle fighting a truck.
And then, like, literally wins the fight by throwing a motorcycle into the cab of
he
the truck.
He jumps the motorcycle into the cab of the truck. Jumping off, the motorcycle hits, explodes, killing the guy inside the truck, as the guy then hits the top of the truck and rolls and falls off.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, my God, yes. Because everything you've just heard, you're like, how did you not make 12 movies out of those action sequences?
Right?
Because this is Born to Fight. Born to Fight is probably the most visceral, satisfying, nearly nonsensical, wafer-thin plot movie you will ever watch. It's a movie that is so good at executing everything it has set out to execute that everything that's that feels like it's kind of a limp setup, you're down with, because it's like, dude, this movie delivers in every single way, and every time I mention it to anyone who's seen it, they get giddy.
For sure.
It is a giddy fucking movie. It was really hard to find over here for a while. It was something you had to get as an import, and it was hard to import. The only reason I had a copy was because Pedazzo Chunk had one, and when they went out of business, that was that and Izumi are two of the things I yoinked up. I'm like, I'm getting these.
Yeah.
And thankfully, Quentin Tarantino teamed up with Dragon Dynasty to bring over a bunch of his favorite stuff, and this was in it. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, Quentin. Oh, Quentin, I love you.
And there's a second disc on the Dragon Dynasty release of this on DVD that is just a one-hour documentary about the making of this film, which I have to assume is just them showing all the stunt people to prove that they're still alive. They're all holding like that day's newspaper, like, see, they're all still here. Just wanted to let
they're
you know.
They're not really dead.
They're not really dead.
They did not lose limbs.
We came close, but they're all still here. Yeah,
born
to fight. Relentless action film.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the junk food pairing. This is the kind of movie that, you know, kind of the movie that inspired this podcast. And by that, I mean the kind of movie that you sit around with your friends and you drink a six pack and you just love the hell out of because it is just so over the top, absurd, amazing, and something you have to see to believe that it exists in the first place. And since this is a Thai movie, so necessitating of drinking beers with your buddies to watch, I'm going to go with Sing A, one of the official beers of the nation of Thailand.
That's a good beer.
Damn good beer. Absolutely. So go to your fanciest craft beer store near you. See if they've got some Sing A. Get some. Sit down and watch this Dragon Dynasty DVD and just prepare to have your mind blown for, at the very least,
31
straight minutes. God damn it. Oh, thank you guys so much for joining us for this breathless investigation of Born to Fight.
Born to Fight.
If you would like to hear more of our yammering, you can go to iTunes as well as Stitcher and find our back catalog. Please, if you go to iTunes, rate us, review us, help us move up the ranks there. We'd really, really appreciate that. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. You can also like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at Twitter, on Twitter at Massaworm, MASSAWYRM, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Massaworm.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at Bri Guy Salisbury, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Brian Salisbury Critic. And this is also going to mark the very first Junk Food Cinema giveaway. Oh, hell yes, folks. Here's how it's going to work. I'm going to ask you a trivia question based on our collective work with Junk Food Cinema, and you have to be following us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and direct message us with the answer to this trivia question. Cargill mentioned diving through the air in slow motion while firing guns is one of the pillars of Wu.
The five pillars of Wu.
I'm going to need you to go back through our episodes and find me one other of our mentioned pillars of Wu. Direct message us the answer. The first person to do that will win a mystery title from the Junk Food Vault. It's going to be weird, but you're going to like it. That's probably going to be the title of my autobiography now that I think about it.
I think you said that to a lot of women.
Perhaps I did. Well, thanks again for joining us, everybody. And remember, you were not born to lose. You were not born to be subjugated. You were born
to fight!